From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Open lines this hour. Next hour, Michael Tazarian on the Nephilim and genetic experiments on humans from a classic show. I'll tell you why. As you know, my son is getting married early Saturday morning, so I was going to take tonight off, but I did want to do an hour live for you of open lines and a quick discussion with Richard C. Hoagland as well. So I am here, but the wedding is very, very early, and normally I would just either do the complete show or I would have taken tonight off, a rare tonight off. But here I am, Central Time, so by the time I had gotten off the air, which would have been 4 o'clock in the morning, I would have had to be at the church by 10, 11 o'clock, so it's a little too early. This is an important day for him and for our family, so I hope you understand. First hour tonight live, and then we're going to go to a fascinating interview with Michael Tazarian. Now, here's some of the news of the day. Key players in the Bush administration think a military confrontation with Iran is unavoidable, and they have stepped up military planning for such a prospect, according to several experts. But some of these observers have stressed that military strikes against Iran are not yet imminent. Dina Schlosser, who was being retried on a capital murder charge in Texas for the killing of her 10-month-old daughter by, and this is kind of gruesome, cutting off her arms, was found not guilty by reason of insanity. Both sides waived closing arguments, and a judge issued the verdict after a brief proceeding. The 38-year-old Schlosser of Plano, Texas, is expected to be committed to a state mental hospital for treatment. Police arrested her in November of 2004 after finding her baby dying in its crib, Schlosser soaked in blood, holding a kitchen knife and listening to a hymn. In Detroit, an investigation is underway after a 6-year-old boy called 911 to get help for his mother. The operator acted as if it were a joke. 6-year-old Robert Turner called 911 on February 20th. He thought his mother, 46-year-old Sherelle Turner, had passed out. She was later found dead. 911 tapes detail the call where the boy tells a female operator that his mom had passed out. The operator demands to speak to an adult before sending help. Multi-million dollar selling author Dan Brown has won his court case against two authors who claim that he copied their ideas. The high court threw out a breach of copyright claim by the authors of Holy Blood, Holy Grail over the Da Vinci Code. Now that has left these two, by the way, with a bill of $609,000 in court costs and attorney fees. I've got to tell you, this may be one of the most sensational finds I have ever heard about. In the Egyptian desert, a long-lost Gospel of Judas offering another version of the most notorious biblical betrayal that Jesus apparently had asked Judas to turn him over to be crucified. According to a religion and a professor at the University of North Carolina, his name is Bart Erfman, he says that the good guy in this betrayal is Judas. He's the only apostle who understands Jesus. The crumbling 1,700-year-old papyrus is a Coptic translation of one of the many Gospels written in Greek around the year 150 A.D. Only the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John were deemed inspired by God and included in the New Testament. The rest were declared, well, not so. Scholars have long known of the Gospel of Judas because a bishop of France mentioned it around 180 A.D. in his treatise against heresies, but they thought it had been destroyed long ago. It describes Judas as Jesus' best friend, whom he raised above all the other apostles. "You will exceed all of them," Jesus said. "You will sacrifice the man that clothes me. Step away from the others, and I shall tell you the mysteries of the kingdom. It is possible for you to reach it, but you will grieve a great deal." He also went on to say that history will show that for years and years and years, they will hate him. They will hate Judas. It's an amazing story. Maybe next week we'll have more on this as we'll chat with that professor. Astronomers have discovered the planet Uranus has a blue ring, only the second found in the solar system. Like the blue ring of Saturn, it probably owes its existence to an accompanying small moon. Over the past 3 months, workers at the Kennedy Space Center have tripped, dropped things, banged into sensitive equipment, and started fires in a deadly string of accidents that has NASA perplexed. The space agency has launched investigations into 3 accidents: the death of a worker who fell off a roof, the bumping of Space Shuttle Discovery robotic arm by a platform, and the damage last week to an instrument that supplies power to the orbiters. But there have been at least 7 other incidents since the beginning of the year. NASA is very baffled by this. Well, finally, we're getting some pictures in from the MRO, the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. A little late, though, that had Richard C. Hoagland concerned. And I've got to tell you, I've been on the EnterpriseMission.com website all day. Richard has posted something called the Lost Cities of Barsoom. Take a look at it. I think he's on to something on this one. We're going to talk with Richard C. Hoagland in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Richard C. Hoagland, founder, principal investigator of the Enterprise Mission, a public policy and research group that has been investigating scientific possibilities of intelligently designed extraterrestrial life across the solar system for many years now. If you have not been up to his website yet, please do so, enterprisemission.com. Richard, I've got to tell you, I spent the day today looking at some of the things you have posted on the EnterpriseMission.com. And as I was scrolling down reading it, I first said, okay, here's this little picture he's got circled. Come on, Richard, this is a push. And then when you blew it up, oh my, oh my, oh my, and showed that description of an old type city in the Middle East and compared it to what might be on Mars, it is one of your best works, I think.
Thank you. So first of all, thank you for taking the time to be here this evening. Congratulations on your son's wedding.
Oh, we are so excited about this. This is his high school sweetheart.
I know, you've been building for this for a long.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, this is special. This doesn't happen very often. So enjoy, enjoy, enjoy.
Thank you, Richard. Appreciate it. Now talk about enjoying. People getting to your website are going to enjoy this. This is, I think, as remarkable as the work you have done on Cydonia. It is just not possible that that could be naturally made, not with what I saw.
Well, that's what we think. Remember, there's a quote further down in the piece from Carl Sagan, who said in Cosmos that the first sign of intelligent life on Earth is in the geometric regularity of its constructions. And it's obvious from looking at these images that we have stunning, repeating over and over again, geometric regularity all over the place. And this was the first test image from this new incredible camera on this new incredible spacecraft. Imagine, George, what we're going to see when we get down into the final orbit 10 times closer.
Whatever this is, this dilapidated city, it's got to be pretty old.
It's old, it's ancient, it was buried in sediments, it is totally consistent with our Mars tidal model, which had Mars orbiting, you know, Planet 5, the Thomas Van Plandern Planet 5, which then mysteriously, for reasons unknown, blew up, splattering Mars with all kinds of debris and material in the atmosphere. That came down, rained down as fallout, creating huge amounts of dust and sand and dirt mixed with water because the oceans on Mars then sloshed. And you wound up burying these cities, where I have examples from the Soviet missions, the Phobos 2 mission. I have examples from the Odyssey mission released back in 2002. I have the MRO data. We posted a few minutes ago, literally just before airtime, the first color images from the same mission, the MRO mission that came in last week. And there is stunning color differences over these artifacts, showing that they're apparently made of something different chemically than the surrounding desert sand. So by the time we get this mission in the proper orbit in the fall, you and I and this audience are going to have a tremendous amount of fun basically asking NASA to point it here, point it there, and take the confirming pictures that will prove once and for all somebody once lived on Mars.
How did you find these images? I mean, I know the photographs you had and you were able to get and look at by just, picking up the various MRO images that they supplied. But, I mean, how did you pick that spot?
Well, there are a range of spots on this first mosaic. The mosaic is 30.9 miles by 11.7. And when you download the TIFF version from the Planetary Data Center from the JPL Photo Journal, it comes to 190.5 megabytes, which, of course, is 19.5.
Yeah, it is.
The 30.9 is 39, which is twice 19.5. It's obvious that the Arizona folks were coding in the image itself the clues, look at this one, look at the first one. And they rushed it out even before NASA gave approval. So we know from a variety of political surrounds that the guys there are desperate to finally reveal what's waiting on the planet. So I said to myself, okay, all I have to do is look. And it
and
didn't
you did.
Take very long looking to find again and again, example upon example upon example. Now, the hard part, George, was finding examples here on Earth from previous aerial archaeological photo missions.
To compare and match.
So people can see, because I found in my long 20-plus years of doing this, that not a lot of people hang out looking at aerial photographs of ancient ruins under any deserts on any planet, let alone on Mars. So you got to give them a comparison, and that's what we've got on the website. Look at the Lost Cities of Barsoom, updated tonight with the color imagery and the analysis, and then join our conference and have a lot of fun discussing this, because I think we're on the downward slope to final disclosure of what's there.
To a few people who don't have computers, maybe some people who are driving or they're in trucks tonight, Richard, kind of paint them a picture on what we're talking about here.
Okay. Did you see The Day After?
Yes.
The movie, arts movie that was kind of mangled by Dean Devlin and those folks.
Yes.
In that, you saw this incredible tidal wave come sweeping over New York. You saw helicopter shots of the skyscrapers, kind of also similar shots to the TV show. I can't remember the name of it right now. It's the one about the missing children, missing people with the FBI agents, and they always do these aerials. And you see all these squares and geometric things. In The Day After, they were buried underwater in ice. That's what these photos look like. They look like you took New York, buried it under a lot of sand or water or ice, and all you see are the tips of things sticking up and the rectangular foundations of the former shattered architecture.
But, you know, what really got me going was the fact that you were able to find some comparison structures from Earth, because that really brought this all home.
Well, it's comparative morphology, which is a technical term for the way things look the same. That's why Sagan coined his famous phrase, geometric regularity is the first indication of intelligent construction. So if you're walking up on a strange planet, and by walking up, I mean, you know, taking a spaceship and a satellite, and you take photographs, if you see this repeating rectilinear geometry over and over and over again in three dimensions, because if you look carefully at some of the photos, George, you can see that it's three-dimensional. You can see the shadows on the ground. Nature does not, on this scale, do this. It simply doesn't do it. It does it on the scale of crystals. It does it on the scale of certain lava fields. But this fits neither one of those models, and there's so much of it, and it's all over the planet with all kinds of other regular architecture we found on Mars Surveyor imagery and other imagery that there, to me, that's why when I say there's stuff on Mars with a 99% certainty, I've got the photographs to prove it.
Richard, this story about Mars being perplexed at a trail of mishaps, I've got to get your reaction to this. They're saying over the last 3 months, workers at the Kennedy Space Center have tripped, dropped things, banged into sensitive equipment, started fires, and they can't figure out what's going on. I don't think it's sabotage, but what's happening? Why this string of rotten luck?
I have no idea. I'm glad they're looking into it. If I was going to put on my paranormal coast hat, I would say that it may be something in Florida, physics-wise, is screwing up the attention span. There's an attention deficit disorder thing. I mean, remember, what's his name? Lee Scanlon put Carl Castle in Florida for a reason. If the physics is changing and certain people are more sensitive, I mean, there are people who can't live near power lines because they just go nuts. it could be that there is a changing. I mean, this is what I'm thinking of out of thin air. I frankly don't know, and I'm curious to find out what they come to ultimately decide this is being caused by. And obviously, it's got to stop, or we're not going to be able to launch that mission in July.
What if it's an omen? You know, sometimes things happen. Sometimes,
oh, now we're really getting
Sometimes fate does things. And, you know, when you look at all these things, I mean, here's just an example. I read a little bit of this. The space agency has launched investigations into three accidents. The death of a worker who fell off a roof.
Tragic.
The bumping of the space shuttle Discovery's robotic arm by a platform. And damage last week to an instrument that supplies power to the orbiters. But there have been at least seven other incidents since the beginning of the year. I mean, that's unusually high.
Well, remember what happened before the launch of Discovery last year. Now they had the panels on the windows fall all the way to the bottom of the vertical orbiter.
Right.
Striking the tiles, which has never happened before. It could just be, opening night jitters. It could be that since all these workers realize that if this mission doesn't work, the manned space program is really in a pickle. It could be that they're just hyper nervous and hyper sensitive, and they're making stupid mistakes because they're trying too hard. You know, they need.
You may be right there too. Absolutely.
Okay, so I mean, without an investigation, we don't know, but I have a feeling they'll get to the bottom and they will get there. Now, for those people, by the way, on the computer who don't have access to these images because they don't have computers, I'm going to be showing these images with the explanations at the New Living Expo at the end of April in San Francisco. I'm adding them to my 2012 presentation because there is a connection, as you would have seen, George, if you'd seen what I did in Los Angeles, which, of course, you didn't, but that's okay.
Look, all information on this conference on the website, obviously.
It's at the top of the website, right under the Mars Stories. There's a nice link there to the New Living Expo. They don't have an 800 number that I can remember off the top of my head, but if we find one, we'll put it up. If you're on a computer, just go log in. It will take you right to what I'm going to say, and you can sign up and all that. And people will be able to see these images in San Francisco up close and personal, and I'm going to be spending several hours, George, describing how all this fits together and is bringing us toward 2012.
Of course, in fairness to me, I was going to meet you when you were at the L.A. Conscious Life Expo, but you came down with virus.
That's true. That's
all
true.
Right. However, those people who have not had this opportunity to see you at a conference, I want to set the scene for just a moment on what happens when Richard C. Hoagland walks into a room. First of all, more people are lined up to see Hoagland than most of the other speakers combined. So what happens is they flood the room while the poor other speaker before Hoagland is still giving his speech. So it becomes just an incredible administrative move. So Richard is able to almost be a traffic cop and moves around and manipulates people to get into rooms and wait. It's an incredible thing. But then once he finally starts, it's a wonderful presentation, and you'll get a kick out of it. Even with that, what do you call that tie thing you wear?
You mean my bolo?
The bolo, that's right.
That's very right. New Mexico.
I think it's a trademark of you now because I see you with it all the time.
Well, I borrowed it from Gene Shoemaker, my late friend Gene Shoemaker, who I saw in the 60s back when everybody was so uptight and all the NASA people were appearing in these button-down shirts and the narrow black ties and the pocket protectors. I saw this funny guy, from out west named Gene Shoemaker on TV talking about lunar missions and lunar pictures. And instead of wearing any of the normal NASA regalia, he was wearing a bolo tie. He was as free in his dress code as he was in his ideas and his expansive theories as to how the moon formed and how craters were made and stuff like that. So when I moved to New Mexico, I decided that I would be myself and I'd wear a bolo tie in honor of both Gene and the fact that we have a lot of native culture around here. They make exquisite turquoise, exquisite art, and it's a way of kind of showing support for the Americans that have been a bit forgotten.
Good for you, Richard. Well, good luck at the conference, and good luck with this research. And as you know, we have crashed your websites.
I hadn't checked, but please.
Yeah, it is. It is crashed. So I guess it'll take time before people kind of back off and it comes back online again, huh?
Okay, it will.
Sorry, Richard. Well, you know the power of Coast to Coast listeners.
I certainly do. And thank you, my friend, and have a wonderful wedding. Give my best regards to your son, and hopefully I'll see you when you get back to L.A.
Absolutely. I'll be there in about a week. Here are the numbers for open lines. Just you and me, west of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line is 818-501-4721. And guess what? Here's the wild card line, 818-501-4109. I'm George Norrie, and get ready for Coast to Coast AM. And by the way, thank you to all of you who are sending your congratulations on my son's wedding tomorrow. I do appreciate it. Forgot to tell you about Richard C. Hoagland's critically acclaimed DVD series called God, Man, and E.T. You can find it on the EnterpriseMission.com website when we stop crashing it, or you can call this toll-free number. This is a tremendous series of DVDs done when Richard was at a conference with some heavy hitters talking about God, Man, and E.T. Here's a toll-free phone number for you, 877-345-6222, 877-345-6222. Let me take this opportunity, too, to thank all of you who listen to us on the nearly, just a shade under 500 affiliates, but we'll go over that this year, way over that, thanks to you. So hello to you and thank you. Streamlink members, calling yourselves the Coast Riders when we do the live chat with you. XM Radio, hello to you folks. A lot of truck drivers out there. The NighthawkZone.com folks, ever growing, ever supportive of this program. Appreciate what you have done in the very short time that you have been in existence. 8 months old now. Amazing. Fantastic Form Pirates. The original Chatters, hello to all of you and my special friends there who I admire greatly, especially you, Spike Mike, a good man, a decent person. Imaginative Worlds, the Sorcery IRC folks, National Radio Club, and the rest of the chat rooms, and of course, the rest of the world. Back in a moment with Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Open Lines. Let's go right to the phones. Let's pick it up by going to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Where are you?
Syracuse, New York.
Well, welcome to the program.
George, you really are a wonderful guy. It just comes right over the airways in your voice. You don't have to be a remote viewer to know that you're a nice person.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, and I wish you luck with your son and wish him luck. I'm calling in regard to Malachi Martin and in part, but really I wanted to kind of like change that. I was concerned one night about 3 weeks ago when you had mentioned something about the Catholic Church, you being a Catholic, and you having concerns about what and the fact that you're really not that much of a practicing Catholic.
Right.
I was in the same boat as you for many years of my life until recently, the last few years, when I discovered the problem with the Church. And what had happened with the granting of the annulments of all these divorces, which, of course, was unheard of in centuries past. And I look at society as this, and it might even intertwine with Alex Jones, the fact that in the 1960s, if we can point to any decade, of what had happened to this country and really throughout the world, whether it was the Nixon scandal or the Vietnam War, or the free love and the hippie movement, and all these things that happened. But one thing's never really brought up. It really was the destruction of the Roman Catholic Church. And I say that because during that time is when the Second Vatican Council occurred. And at that time, they completely changed the Mass. That one that you were baptized in, the one that I was baptized in, from Latin speaking, but not only that the words of the Latin were so important, which of course it is to make it a one holy Catholic and apostolic church, and the one language being Latin throughout the world, where we can go to any country and we can enjoy the Mass no matter what language we knew. We could always refer to the Latin if for our Mass.
Do you believe in end times or prophecy?
Well, of course, because that's part of our Catholic teaching, that there will be this revelation.
That's one of the things that I think will probably stand out more than anything that we have heard about or have read about with any of the religions. And I think it's going to come pretty darn fast.
You know, George, if I could just have another minute of your time, I know you want to get to other callers, but there was a priest back in the 19, an archbishop by the name of Archbishop Marcel Lefebvre, and he did not go along with the changes that happened in the 60s with the Roman Catholic Church. He kept his seminary in Icon, Switzerland, and out of that seminary, he has created what is known as the Society of St. Pius X. From that seminary, there are 360 priests today, four bishops. One of the bishops, now with a different society, Society of St. Pius V, who only do the traditional Latin Mass and hold on to the dogmas that were always taught by the traditional Catholic Church, the real church. His name is Bishop Kelly. And if you ever wanted to do an interview and understand what real Catholicism is from the time you were born until about 1967, it would be one of the greatest interviews, most interesting interviews that you could ever do. His name is Bishop Kelly.
Okay.
Let me hold. I would give your screen caller his
phone. All right. You got a deal. Put him on hold, Danny, and we'll do that, and let's grab some other calls because we just don't have a lot of time here. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Oh, man, hey, it's an honor, George. My name's Andy Hirsch. I live in Houston.
Hi, Andy. What's going on?
Oh, man, I just wanted to call in and tell you a little story, if I could. I've been an aspiring filmmaker since I was little, due to my friend Jeffrey. He always wanted me to live my dreams. And anyway, my friend Yas, he supplied me, believe it or not, with a time machine about a week ago. And I went ahead in the future at Halloween, about 3 years from now, to see myself. And, man, I think tonight I decided, oh, I'm going to change my life, you know, because I realized the same options have been put in my hand from now till then, and I'm not doing any better. I'm still drinking and still not living the dream, you know.
So you moved ahead, though, 3 years, Andy. You saw yourself, and I guess you said you're an aspiring filmmaker. Did you hit it big in the future?
Oh, yeah, no way. Yeah, I still, you know, I had my camera in one hand and a beer in the other, and we were still filming locations. And, man, it scared me so much that I came back. I didn't want to, I don't know what the paradox is with time travel. You see it in movies, and, oh, man, I don't know where they got it from, but it scared the living death out of me. And I think I want to change my life because I realize that I'm still trying for something that's not going to even happen.
Well, now you can change. Now, tell me about this time machine apparatus. What did it look like?
Well, the best way I could describe it, I describe it as, have you ever seen the old show with Scott Bakula, Quantum Leap?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Matter of fact, I met Scott about 6 months ago when they were wrapping up one of the Star Trek episodes.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I'm a big fan of his. I've seen a lot of his failed TV shows and the bigger ones. But I describe it like Al's little hand device. You just kind of click in a location and a date, and I didn't know what to do, so I clicked the location, like basically a park across from my apartment, and Halloween, because that was my favorite time of year, and I'm always out doing something, so I'd hope I see myself, and I did it pretty late, and I watched myself for about 20 minutes, and I got lucky enough to hear myself have a conversation about how my options are the same, my short films aren't going anywhere, I have no potential to make a feature-length film. And I was talking to my friend Yachts, my friend Chris and Jeff, and oh man, it was just horrible. I realized I was still drinking, and I realized maybe now if I quit drinking, maybe it'd get better. But, you know, should I take the chance? I wanted to get your comment.
Oh, absolutely, Andy. You've got a great gift here. You've got an opportunity to change your life. You saw what your future is. Not a lot of people have that option. So fix it, change it, and then move ahead. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, George. My name is Steve. I'm from Nesbitt, Mississippi, the home of WREC in Memphis.
Absolutely.
You guys on.
Hi, Steve.
And one of the reasons why I'm calling you this morning, I'm a longtime amateur radio operator. And as you know, amateur radio, we do a lot of experimenting on many different frequencies. From way below our known radio spectrum to all the way above our known radio spectrum into light and so forth. And one of the most interesting facets of amateur radio is that no matter where we've been, whether we've been in space or around the world or down under the sea, we've had communications there at one point time or the other. Whether it's been with the Mir or the International Space Station or the shuttles. And it's come to me that, you know, since we have all these different niches of frequencies that we can go to, it's a very good probability that, you know, at one time or the other, there could be a possibility that we might be able to have some form of communications, you know, to an extraterrestrial.
Well, you know, the folks from SETI are hoping we have something like that, Steve, but you're thinking of it in a different way.
Yes, because if you take a look at it, there are literally hundreds of thousands of amateur radio operators. And as you know, we go on many different frequencies throughout the spectrum. And we do a lot of listening. One of my little niches in amateur radio is I like to see how far I can talk to, whether it's around the world or beyond. And literally, you know, that's really what I like to do.
What would you do, Steve, if you picked up a voice of an alien, an extraterrestrial, beaming from his planet, from his home base? Maybe you couldn't decipher his language, but you sure knew that it was something strange and out of this world. What would you do with it?
Well, first of all, you would want to try to record it, you know, try to have some type of positive identification that it is some type of unknown source. You know, we listen, and, you know, since I do a lot of listening, one of the facets of DXing is that you've got to listen. You've got to listen for the very weak signals. You've got to really pay attention. And one of the things you would do would try to record it and then try some way of analyzing it through oscilloscopes, listening through different types of filtering and so forth to try to determine what type of emission or what type of signal it is. And then from that point, you could probably try to figure out whether how to decode this.
Would you be able to determine where it was coming from?
Well, that's a very good point. Due to the way that signals react through the ionosphere and the way that they enter, depending upon the frequency that they come in on, you might have a chance if you have a type of antenna that you could beam up and take a coordinate, you know, where it's actually coming in from, if it's direct. But that's a very good question. On VHF, UHF, and the super high frequency ranges, it could be done. But, you know, that's one step that we'd really have to look at once that this type of signal was received.
Well, I got to tell you, though, if you got a signal like that, you got to get me a copy. We'll put it on, and you can tell the world what it was all about. I think that would be one of the most incredible finds ever. But also, you know, you talk about finds on this planet. This Judas Gospel, that the story I just had earlier, that's an incredible story, too. We've got to have one on that one. Wildcard Line, welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Margaret from WRVA in Richmond, Virginia.
Hello, Margaret.
Hi. Tonight I was channel surfing for news, going to all the channels, and I was in shock when I saw a story about a man, and they're saying he doesn't need a car anymore to open up his car because he had one of these, I don't know the correct letters, these tags inserted underneath his skin on his wrist, and he just flashed the wrist, and it opened up the car. And I said, oh, my God. The guy just speaking about that this week.
He's got a chip in his hand.
Yes, and I couldn't believe it. And I said, oh, I wonder if George Norrie knows about this. I just had to call you. And I'm glad I got through. I was lucky.
A lot of people are going that way, you know. Yeah. And you know, this is what I find fascinating, Margaret. It seems that some people are accepting it more than I thought they would. I thought everybody would fight these things. It's not happening. In stores, when they introduce fingerprints and they take the money straight out of your bank account, people are signing up for this. It's kind of weird.
It's getting scary, but I know a few years ago, I think it was in Florida, some woman put one in her daughter so she, in case she got lost or something, she could find her. It was
right.
Weird. And I know they were trying to push it into people with Alzheimer's so you could find them. So it's getting scary because little by little it's creeping in. And
I think so. I'll tell you what, I'm not going to get one. Wildcard line, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Welcome to the show.
Hi, this is Andy in Ocean Park, Washington.
Yeah, Andy, sure.
You know, and I'm pretty big on helping veterans today, you know, with the war in Iraq and stuff, and Vietnam veterans, disabled veterans. And I got a letter today, George, from a place called National Veterans Service Fund. You know, and when I first got it, when I first opened up, it says, "Have you forgotten?" You know, and it came on pretty strong, you know, and have you forgotten to do your part and say thank you to the brave disabled vets in the world? And, you know, and please give your $10 or more today, right now. This was from some National Veterans Service Fund.
Now, is it a legitimate organization? I don't know. I haven't heard of it.
Well, I turned the back of the letter over and got my, I guess I'm dated, I'll tell you, I got my magnifying glass out, and I started reading the fine print in the back, and they take 98% of the money, and they say they give out 2% to program services, and as you go on in the fine print, they say they're not affiliated with any VFW or any other organization, veterans organization. And the reason I'm calling is just to make the public aware to be careful who you donate to, because and a lot of their money goes to a paid professional fundraiser.
Well, you know what's difficult too, Andy, is even the Red Cross, even when, let's say, the Hurricane Katrina situation in
right.
Rita, and the president goes on television and he says, please give to the Red Cross. The Red Cross has been implicated in some incredible situations of late where they're questioning what they have done with the money, where it's gone.
I know, it makes the public sick.
Absolutely. I mean, and there's even a lawmaker out there who wants to revoke their not-for-profit charter, I guess, or their tax not-for-profit tax ability, and it does make you sick.
And you can get generators pretty cheap out of Louisiana nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just you know, that's what's wrong with this. We ought to have a year of the truth.
We are the most benevolent people on this planet, and you know, it just sickens me that organizations are out there to take advantage of people. I guess the word to the wise is really study and investigate who you're going to give your money to.
Right. I just wanted to call and make everybody aware of this organization. And, I even got their website number, but I'm sure if you get a letter, read it thoroughly. I got to get my, as I'm getting older, George, I got my magnifying glass out. You got to read the fine print.
Andy, I've got a microscope.
Okay. But anyway, enjoy the program, and good luck on the wedding, and we'll all march on.
Okay, you got that right. As a matter of fact, I know how much you look forward to your Friday into Saturday night open lines. As a matter of fact, I do too. It's almost like after a hard-hitting week of coast-to-coast programs, it's kind of a night to just sit back and relax and chat with you and have some incredible stories shared, especially when we open up some of those hotlines, be they the Nine Lives hotline or the Scariest Night hotline or whatever we talk about. So next Friday, of course, we'll have our open lines again. And I just want to thank all of you for your kind understanding here. A son's wedding comes only once in a blue moon, hopefully only once. And we're going to do that tomorrow. That's my reason for being in St. Louis this long. And I pack up and go back in a week. After Easter, I'll be back in Los Angeles, and we've got some incredible things we're working on there for you for Coast to Coast programs, absolutely staggering, which will allow us to chat with some people who happen to live out in that area. I'm not going to tell you who yet. It's a secret. So all of you have a great weekend. Don't forget, on Sunday, we're replaying the Philip Corso interview, the one that Art Bell did. It is a classic Ian Punnett show, Coast to Coast Live, tomorrow at the 6 p.m., and most of you pick that up. If not, you get it on Streamlink. And I'll be back with you on Monday. So have a great weekend. It's off to the wedding for me. And sit back and enjoy the rest of Coast to Coast. It's not going anywhere. As a matter of fact, it's a great interview with Michael Tesarian about the Nephilim and how they genetically altered you.